Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I hit the ball first time and there it was in the back of the net.
Motivation, yes. Motivation, motivation. The 3 M's.
Perverse in a football field with kids watching.
Ladies and gentlemen, England will be playing 4-4-2.
And that, boys, is how to take a penalty.
8-1.
8-1. I was just saying to your colleague, referee's got me the sack. Thank you ever so much for that one.
Hello and welcome to Beyond the Touchline, the football podcast that's not actually about football. Jacques Derrida said that beyond the touchline there is nothing, but simply by virtue of being a philosopher that was talking about football, he was contributing to something. That something is football culture, and that's what this podcast is here to discuss. The film, TV, books, games, music, comics, toys, and anything else that helps to make sense of the game we love. This time around, we're going to be looking at the classic late 90s Nickelodeon sitcom, Renford Rejects. But who are we? Well, I'm Seb Patrick, a bespectacled goalkeeper with a collection of bad teenage poetry and philosophy football shirts. And on my virtual left, we have a smooth-talking midfield maestro who confuses the locals by wearing the replica shirts of a team from the opposite end of the country, David Hartrick.
That's good. That's good. Brighton and Hove Albion, not Hull City, though.
Yeah, you've kind of done it in the reverse direction.
Yes,
haven't you?
I have, yeah.
Dave, if you were forming a five-a-side team made up of your mates from school, what would it be called?
My school was a war zone. I did not go to a good school. So I don't know if you remember, but a while ago there was that BuzzFeed, I don't know if it was BuzzFeed, but one of those silly things where how many points you get is how posh your school was. And it was out of 125. And I got a friend to do it as well, just to double check. And Rastrick High School scored 2 points out of 125. So it would have to be something like, unfortunately, the Brawlers or something down that line. Because, yeah, I had a very interesting life at secondary school that I couldn't possibly go into on a football culture podcast.
Okay, well, maybe one day we'll hear a bit more about that. Meanwhile, on my virtual right, we have a virtuoso striker with an absolutely outrageous accent that surely nobody in their right mind would ever believe was genuine. It's Dennis Hurley.
Hello, and thank you for that excellent intro. I wish I were a virtuoso striker in a 7-season schoolboy football career. I was more like Rob Jones in that I played fullback and never scored.
Well, Dennis, what colour kit would your five-a-side team wear?
Oh, that's a good one. Some combination of blue, white and red, just because those three colours together make for the best football kits. Don't at me.
Yes, by which you mean the kit that the USA had just before the 94
Absolutely.
World Cup that was the white kit
or,
with the red and blue three stripes
France's
on the shoulder.
Euro 84 kit or...
Crystal Palace sash kit.
Yeah, Bayern Munich kits before their fans got all uppity and decided they didn't want any blue on it.
Yeah. Didn't want the blue on it. Yeah, when I was a kid, and I think this was, this would have been primary school age. And when I don't know if anybody else ever did this thing, but like you invent a fictional football team to like make up stories of like you and your friends playing in, and then obviously computer games came along and let you actually do that in a computer game. But I remember doing that in school because we were like going to do a Roy the Rover style make our own comic, and I based the team's kit on, I had discovered the Crystal Palace sash kit through a Sabutio team that a friend had, and I thought this was the best kit ever. So from then on, my fictional team's colours were always blue and red and white.
It's hard to argue with the logic.
Agree with you on that. So as I mentioned at the start, we are going to look at Renford Rejects. But before that, as a warm-up question, we always like to do a warm-up question. As we record this episode, it's early June, and there's finally a glimmer of footballing hope on the horizon after these long weeks and months without. But what I want to know is, in that time, aside from the football itself, because this is beyond the touchline after all, what is the thing that you've missed the most about football? Dave, I'll come to you first.
I've thought long and hard about this question because, I've watched an awful lot of snooker that there's been no crowd in. I've watched a lot of the Bundesliga, and I've been trying to sort of work out where in my affections the football is compared to a day out at the football. And I know it's probably not the answer that this question requires, but I've realised that the actual football is surprisingly high up there for me. I've always sort of prided myself on not letting the football get in the way of a good day out at the football, particularly being a Brighton fan, because, to be frank, there's been more bad days than good. But I realise that it's just the whole, it's the emotional spectrum of it, because what people who haven't been watching the Bundesliga or other sport will realise very quickly is that without a crowd, it removes a sense of consequence from the game. So a player can miss and it doesn't feel like it means anything. Whereas when you have that crowd in there and that hum, that you know, if I'm doing a town game, we call it the Galfram groan, it means something. It puts a value on every action. And I've really missed that sort of 90 minutes. I mean, even as a neutral doing Huddersfield town games or working on other games across the north, you may not realise it, but you nearly always get sort of brought into the context of a game somehow. If nothing else, you will decide there's a bad guy. And if that's your only sort of point of interest in the game, that they lose or that something bad or embarrassing happens to them, that's, you've still bought into it. And I think that, I think what I'm missing is that sort of level of emotion. And I like, without getting too deep, I've often wondered what people who don't like sport, where they get that sort of level of emotion from. You know, like England winning the Cricket World Cup, I'm not a massive cricket fan, but that Sunday was one of the most sort of deeply emotional days of my life. It was an absolute roller coaster. And I, you know, I don't know if these people get it from music or art or somewhere else, but I've realised there's a hole in my emotional spectrum there at the moment, and I'm really looking forward to football coming back. I'm even more looking forward to playing again. I'm missing, as somebody who's played football for teams from the age of sort of 5 and is still shambling around a pitch twice a week at the age of 41, I'm absolutely bereft without a kick about. But yeah, I'm missing the sort of emotional consequence in watching a normal, in horrible air quotes, proper game of football. And I don't think we're going to get that for a while, but I think we'll all acclimatise somehow and get enough of a kick from it.
Dennis, how about you? Please tell me that you're not just going to say the game itself as well, because we're going to undermine the entire premise. As lovely an answer as that was, Dave, we're going to undermine the entire premise.
I told
podcast,
you it wouldn't be the answer you wanted.
Yeah, I was about to say I can't give anywhere near as eloquent an answer as that. Funnily enough, you mentioned England winning the Cricket World Cup. That was 3 days after my son had been born, but I was following that and the Wimbledon final on Twitter, basically, on the phone in the hospital ward. Well, I think it was the British Grand Prix on that day as well.
Yes, yeah, it was.
It was a real definitely. Super Sunday of sport. And there was a couple of...
One the likes of which we likely won't see for a long time.
No.
And there was a couple of big hurling games on here as well. So it all kind of came together. And I couldn't watch any of it live. But anyway, in terms of what I'll miss, I suppose I've a two-pronged answer because my job is to cover Cork City games here in Ireland. And then obviously I consume the Premier League as an armchair fan. So domestically, I just miss driving. Well, see, I don't miss the away games because they come back so late. But just driving usually to Dublin on a Friday afternoon for a Cork City away game and getting there at about 5 or 5:30 for a quarter to 8 kickoff, and just, you know, eating my homemade chicken and pasta dinner in the car and congratulating myself on not getting fast food. And then just sitting in the press box for about an hour and a half beforehand, just looking forward to the game.
Do you know, this? I know this is an incredibly niche answer for, because I know the majority of our listeners don't work in the game, but me and Dan Story talk about this a lot. The feeling of being in an empty football ground and watching it fill up around you from a press box is just... for me, one of the best things in the world. It's just absolutely brilliant. It's a feeling that I think some of the journalists who I won't name, who we all know, have got to the point where they don't like football and everything's an inconvenience and what have you. As soon as you lose that sense of wonder for that alone, I think you're done.
Yeah.
It's just brilliant, that, Dennis. You bang on.
My favourite ground to do that is probably Dalymount Park, which is... about a year or two away from being knocked down and completely rebuilt, and it is, you know, it has seen far better days, but it's still a lovely place to go. And just like you say, Dave, just watch it fill up on a sunny evening, because we have a summer season here. Well, probably don't have any season this year, but, and then just in terms of English football, it's just kind of reading good journalism about it, you know, like. On a Monday, like Monday is probably the most structured work day in my week, in that I have to go to an office, and I like to kind of take my 11 o'clock break and get a cup of tea and just read winners and losers on Football 365 and read like the European football roundup on The Guardian, you know, just so I can feel kind of, I would say, educated, like, or, you know, discerning by reading something beyond... what's going on in England. And then just a day or two before an Arsenal game, I like to go onto the Arsenal website, and they publish the colours that are going to be worn, which kits each team and the goalkeepers and the referee will wear, and it's just a small little pleasure in my life.
That's the most Dennis Hurley thing I've ever heard.
You have said that quite a lot over the course of this podcast.
You just keep out Dennising yourself, that's the thing.
Yeah, I do, yeah. None more Dennis.
My answer to this is that I, more than anything, I'm missing Five Live. There's kind of two sides to this. One side, and the side that surprises me more, is the podcast side of it, which I'm one of the people who, after the kind of the great Richardson split podcast war, I kind of found myself, after initially, you know, going, okay, I'll listen to both of them, finding that was just too much football podcast for a given week. And more I was finding myself not actually bothering to listen to either of the two infamous split podcasts. And I found myself this season, my favourite football podcast started to be the Five Live Football Daily. I think the mixture of people that they have on, and what surprises me is that there are ex-players on that who I've never had any time for when they're on TV, who just come alive on the radio, and I think the dynamic works really well. So I found myself, particularly on a Monday, and then I think on a Tuesday when they do the Monday Night Club podcast version, those would tend to be like my go-to listens first thing in the morning on a commute. So that surprised me in and of itself. But more than that, I miss Five Live, the station, as a comforting background presence, because I'm a bit weird in that I'm not great at watching football that I'm not personally invested in. You know, I will, but I don't, unlike a lot of people, I don't go out of my way. I don't tend to find the time in a weekend because of various other commitments and things on to actually sit down and watch games featuring teams that aren't my team. And, you know, even on Match of the Day, I won't always watch the whole thing. I feel very differently about the radio. If I'm going out for a walk, or if I'm, you know, going out for a run, or if I'm going to the shops, or if I'm going like traveling on a train or whatever, but, at the weekend, if there is a live game on 5 Live, it doesn't matter who's playing, it doesn't matter how long ago it kicked off, I will listen to that above pretty much anything else. I will happily listen to whatever game happens to be on, particularly on like a Sunday afternoon. I used to walk to the station and go and renew my travel card, and like I'd just listen to whatever game was on. And I really miss just, you know, because obviously I know 5 Live is still there, but it's not there. Like, I, you know, I'm not that interested in listening to 5 Live's programmes about things. I miss live football on 5 Live as the most comforting background presence I think it's possible to have in your life, and I can't wait to get that back. The only thing is, I mean, I don't know how football is going to sound on the radio without crowd noise, because, you know, it's one thing on TV, but I think on the radio, I think what radio will have in its favour is that commentators are used to not stopping talking. And something that might become a problem with televised football, where televised commentators are used to leaving gaps, I don't think will be a problem on the radio. But what is that comforting background presence going to sound like when it is just the commentators' voices? I don't know, but, you know, I will look forward to hearing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because on the radio, you'll always know if it's a goal or not a goal a split second before the commentator will be able to say it by the crowd.
Yeah.
But I've noticed, like, the thing about the Bundesliga is it's very formal and their crowds are quite different to ours. They get emotionally invested in a different way to our crowds. And I think our football is genuinely, I think, going to suffer more than most, because as somebody who has, you know, over the last probably 15 years really grazed on most levels and regions of European football to one degree or another, there is, I mean, it's such a cliche thing to talk about, but a British crowd is very different. There is something different about the level of emotional investment in there, and it's not always a good thing. Don't get me wrong, I'm not painting it as a good thing, but it's gonna be, I think it's gonna be tougher than you think to sit down and you know, I had a sneaky peek at a proposed schedule of games, and we have got all of the football coming at us for about 6 weeks. Trust me, just more football than even the most devout addict can handle. But it's going to be very different. It's going to feel very different. And I think, Seb, I think that's stuff like 5 Live is where you're really going to feel the... I think you're going to feel the difference more. I think the commentators will cope better, but it's just it's that hum that is not there. You know, that, like you say, that sort of that rise just before a goal and all these sort of little nuances that I think we're really going to miss. And I just, you know, I just hope and pray we get crowds back at some point early in the new year. I can't see it before then, but. Yeah, it would be nice to think we can at least finish next season in front of something approaching a crowd. I think would be good.
And if that does happen, no matter what point next season is at, Liverpool should be allowed to lift the Premier League trophy in front of a crowd.
Yeah, I don't...
Have a retrospective presentation.
If they win this season's one, of course.
If they win this season's one. It is still very up in the air.
I genuinely don't disagree with that, Seb. I think that's... I think that's a genuine... like, this season is now weird. whoever wins, however it finishes, it is weird. And I think something like that at least returns a small sense of normality to part of it. So I would be, I'd absolutely think that would be the right thing to do, to be honest.
One of the things I'm looking forward to seeing most is a live Premier League game on the BBC.
That's going to be...
It probably won't be any of the big games, but it'll just be... It'll, you know, I think for people of our age, it'll kind of just be a throwback to, you know, when it used to be normal.
I suspect, though, the viewing figures they're going to get for those games, I honestly think might raise an eyebrow or two at the Premier League. And
they'll be huge, like, because... like even the most nondescript FA Cup fourth round game was getting more than the Champions League final on BT. Yeah. If I'm not mistaken,
I suspect they're gonna get
if something is on.
Yeah,
people will watch it. Like
if the BBC get even a sort of half reasonable game, or a game featuring I don't know Man United, Liverpool, Newcastle. Or one of the other really well-supported clubs. I suspect the Premier League are going to get about 6 to 7 times what they would normally get on Sky. And you would hope that is going to cause a discussion somewhere to say, you know, why don't we bite the bullet and put 4, 5, 6 games a year on free-to-air and enjoy the fact that we've suddenly got all these domestic eyes on us.
Don't they do that in Germany? Don't they kind of... A couple of rounds in the season... They show them on free to air. I think maybe start of the season, end of the season, at around Christmas time.
I honestly don't know, but I mean, can you genuinely imagine the viewing figures that a Liverpool game against anyone would get on Boxing Day on the BBC?
Oh yeah,
I mean it'd be absolutely massive, wouldn't it?
We can but dream. I have had, by the way, just I'm not taking anything for granted. I've had terrifying visions of literally not winning a single one of the 9 games and City winning every single one of them. So then again, I did have a dream the other night that Arsenal beat City, and so we only needed to win the derby to do it. So who knows?
That feeling of worrying that you're going to lose every game. Welcome to being a Brighton fan. It's nice to have you on board.
True. Well, speaking of teams who expect to lose every single game in a season, do you see what I did there? Let's have an excellent segue onto the main subject of the episode. A British sitcom from the late 1990s, all about football. It's Renford Rejects. Let's have a listen to a clip and then we'll come back and talk about it.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Remember, football's all about using your brains. You've all got your own individual skills, and now you've got to learn how to use them. That's what Stoker never taught you. You have to learn how to express yourselves.
Like him?
Yeah, exactly like him.
It's a...
Una signorina.
No, it isn't. It's a girl.
It's Robin Walker.
Oh, no way. I know what you're thinking, and the answer's no.
But look, she's a classy player.
And she looked cool. Totally.
They'll laugh at us. The whole school will be laughing at us if we have a girl on our team.
They're laughing at us already. We're the rejects, remember?
See, the Pagliacci, the school of clowns.
Yeah, well, they'll be laughing at us even more.
Just let me go and talk to her, okay? Big mistake.
Okay, so that was Renford Rejects, a sitcom created by Stephen Bowell, Patrick Buckley and Chris Wilson in 1998, running for four series until 2001. It was originally made by and for the Nickelodeon channel, which back in those days was only available on cable and Sky, but it did make its way onto terrestrial TV as well. I think it was part of Channel 4's school holiday programmes. It's about a group of teenagers who, having been rejected by their school team, form a team to enter a five-a-side tournament with the reject name foisted on them by a bitter enemy. They're mostly a hapless bunch, but they usually find a way to succeed in the end, after episodes that present a mixture of football-related jokes and premises and more standard early teen sitcom kind of material. Although in comparison to US-style teen sitcoms, you're Saved by the Bells and the like, there's barely any place for romance-type subplots. The cast members that stay throughout the whole run are Martin Delaney as team captain Jason, Charlie Rowland as goalkeeper Ben, and Paul Paris as the fake Italian-accented Bruno DeGrady, a.k.a. Barry Grade. In the first series, the team's most talented player is a girl named Robin, played by Holly Davidson. She's replaced by Lucy Punch as Sue in Season 2 and Megan Bertie as Mia in Season 3 and 4. For the first two seasons, the team are coached by the school's permacrocked superstar Stuart, played by Matthew Leach. He recovers and joins as a player in Season 3, then leaves for Season 4, where Mohammed George as Dennis takes over as coach. The first two seasons also feature Adam Dean as excessively flash and vain Ronnie, and all four seasons feature Roger Davis as wannabe anchorman Vinny, Alex Norton as the reject's friend, sometime coach and local cafe owner Eddie McAvoy, and Tom Weller as Terry Stoker, longtime archenemy and captain of rival team the Razors. Various current and former footballers appeared in episodes of the show, including Gianfranco Zola, Martin Keown, Ian Rush, Shaka Hislop, Roberto Di Matteo, Casey Keller, Harry Redknapp and the surviving 1966 World Cup winners, while Bob Wilson and Jim Rosenthal also appeared regularly as anchormen. So Renford Rejects is a quite well-loved and remembered show by people of a certain age. I think people who were the target audience for it in the late 90s, which I think actually all of us are a little bit past, although I do remember it being on at the time. It is something that people have quite a lot of affection for. So I'm mindful that we should maybe tread a bit carefully when we talk about how it came across to us when we all went and watched it for this podcast. And what we did was we all went and at least watched the first episode of each of the four series to try and get a kind of feel for each of the four series. I don't know between us how much we've kind of gone on and watched other little bits as well. I have, you guys might have done as well. We'll talk about that as we go along. But let's alienate a load of people younger than us by giving our kind of initial impressions on what Renford Rejects was actually like.
Crap. And that's me tempering it slightly. I think so. I'll leap in first, Dennis. But when you said that, the thing was in the 90s, you mentioned Saved by the Bell, and we had Saved by the Bell was sort of the first of this new wave of American sitcoms for children. Mm. But we then had a load of really good ones like California Dreaming and Hang Time. And
no, I'm going to stop you there, Dave. What we had was Saved by the Bell, which was good. We had California Dreams, which was okay for a bit. And then we had a load of really, really bad ones.
Hang Time was excellent.
USA High.
USA High was the low point until Malibu CA came along, which was even worse.
Hang Time was excellent, and I will take no further questions.
Hang Time was boring.
We'd also had a go in the UK. You know, we had things like Spats, which were genuinely quite funny and quite good. And
Dave, I don't know if you've gone back and watched that one on YouTube. Spats was bad too. I have fond memories of Spats. It was bad.
I think the problem with Renford Rejects is that it suffers more than anything else, and the thing that drove me to distraction is that this is a sitcom sort of supposedly about football that really could have done with somebody who knows about football advising them, telling them that that wouldn't happen, telling them that's not a thing, telling them that doesn't work, telling them... And I'm not asking for, like, a level of gritty realism, but there's just so many things in it where you're just like, no, that's... You're not asking me to suspend my disbelief there. You're asking me to throw myself out the window to get that one by me. And it's just... I mean, we'll go into some of the specifics, and I know I have been saying to you for weeks on WhatsApp, I hate this drivel. I have really, really tried to find some things that I actually think are okay. And as we go on, there are one or two things that I think are okay, but on the whole, I'm never watching Renford Rejects again. Once this podcast is over, I'm never even going to think about them again.
Dennis, what do you have to add to that?
Well, earlier I had to follow an eloquent answer by David. I don't think I have the same problem this time. But overall, my view isn't as, it's terrible. It really is. I think I didn't realise... when I watched it as a 12 and 13 year old, just how bad it was. Like, I have a friend and he says if something is bad, he kind of makes what he calls the pizza comparison, that, you know, even if you're having bad pizza, it's still pizza and it's better than a lot of other things. And so at the time I was probably just excited that there was something about football on television, you know, on weekday afternoons. But, you know, it's so terrible. Like, a couple of notes I've made were, like, that there's no character development at all.
No.
Like, if you're watching the first episode of season 4, the characters are still doing exactly the same stupid fucking things as they were in start of season 1. And the Razors, their mortal enemies, if anything, have become even more stupid. You know, and they were starting from a fairly low base. We were talking earlier about ratings for the Premier League on BBC, and on the Renford Rejects Wikipedia page, could be well out of date. It says the show currently plays at night from 1:50 a.m. to 2:40 a.m. on UK Nickelodeon. I would love to see the ratings for that.
I think that probably is quite an out-of-date line on Wikipedia. It actually says it in the opening of the Wikipedia entry. How did you, out of interest, Dennis, when and where did it air over there? Or did you have Sky or whatever or satellite and did you get Nickelodeon?
Yeah, I had Sky and watched it on Nickelodeon. Was it 96 or 97 it started?
98. Yeah.
Oh, was it okay? Like I'm fairly sure. Like I was watching the episodes as they were new. Because did it start maybe in January? Like, and they were
promoting, I couldn't tell you that.
Maybe a bit before Christmas, like for a couple of weeks. And I was like, oh yes, here's a show.
Oh no,
football.
There we go. Wikipedia does say February 23rd of February 98. It started
February. Yeah. So say from January they were promoting it, and I was getting excited. Like, and it's just a real missed opportunity because. You could have made something good and funny-ish, you know, something that would actually engage the viewers. But this, it was just paint by numbers, get a couple of guest stars in. Like, how big was their budget that they were able to get famous people on to do cameos, but they couldn't pay script writers?
You feel like there are lines in it. I'm going to use the word in inverted commas, there are jokes in it, which you feel like they had written the joke and then went, right, how do we write a scene that gives us a setup or a way we can use this instead of doing it the other way around? It's just so annoying.
Well, like, the very first episode, in the first 10 minutes, we'll say, there are two jokes about Juventus, and they're both awful.
Yeah.
Barry, Bruno de Gradi says, oh, I'm the new striker from Juventus. He says this while he's wearing an Inter Milan shirt.
Yeah.
You know, that's a small thing, and it's me noticing it as a nerd. But it's a pointless mistake. And then they may, you know, someone mentions Machiavelli, and Jason goes, "Oh, Machiavelli, didn't they play for Juventus?" It's like, pick another team at least, like, you know, while they're making the most obvious Italian joke you can.
Yeah, that's what I mean about having. having a football inspector there who can just go, no,
yeah,
no, you can't, that just doesn't work. Because, like, I know I'm not the target audience for this, and I know that it sort of passed me by when it was actually on. But even if I'm 12-year-old Dave Hartrick watching this, that wouldn't get by me either, Dennis, because I was, you know, as we all were, I was a football obsessive, and that would have wound me up like you wouldn't believe. You know, the first shirt we see is a Chelsea away shirt, and he's wearing Barcelona shorts, and we're supposed to think he's like this sort of star player who's going to cruise through this trial. And he does like 3 or 4 keepy ups, and then actually misses one, and then just carries on, does another couple, and then just plants the ball into an empty net. And again, it's like, that's not, that doesn't make me think, what a player this lad is. What an absolute star. And it's stuff like that that you just go, oh,
And those trials for the school team were awful as well.
Yeah, and like just leaning into so many like stupid cliches, like short-sighted goalkeeper, and you know, the other team just going around trying to break everyone's legs, and it's the teacher's son, the manager's son, and it's just
Really? Like Seb mentioned, and it was something I thought of as well. There was no romantic subplots. Well, in the episodes that I saw, maybe there were.
They tend to do it for like there's occasional episodes, but it's your classic thing that you would, I think it's a more almost like an old fashioned kid sitcom thing where like for one episode a female character will be a distraction for one of the characters. I mean, even Jossie's Giants did more in the way of like romance storylines than this did, and that was about younger characters back in the '80s.
And like, it's an open goal, because in each of the 4 seasons they have a girl on the team.
Mm.
You know, why not have a love triangle with 2 of the fellas?
I think they just didn't really. They obviously didn't want to kind of go down that direction with it.
Yeah, and even like, it's never like every scene seems to take place either in the cafe or just at the pitches, like, you know, just have something in school, you know, just to mix it up a bit. Like.
Right, I'm really struggling not to just rant about everything. But that cafe, the fact that the owner thinks he's Elvis or loves Elvis or what have you, what a stupid conceit that is for a kids show. Because in 1998, what 12-year-old kids really loved was adults pretending they were Elvis. But there'll have been kids watching that show who won't have even known who Elvis was.
I just want to, so before we go into kind of too many of the kind of specific things, I'll pull back a little bit, because I kind of want to talk about, well, firstly, I mean, I don't disagree with you guys that it's not very good. I found it interesting to look at this and to try and think about why I maybe thought it was good at the time. Now, at the time, by the time this came on, I was already too old for it, because this started in 98, so I would have been like 15. So I was a little past the target audience for it. And I think it was a show that I probably kind of caught bits of rather than kind of sitting down and kind of regularly watching. And so I think the bits that I saw of it were enough to get a sense of the things that I would have liked about it. And the things that I would have liked about it were, I mean, firstly, the fact that it's about football. Secondly, the soundtrack, because it's full of Britpop singles on the soundtrack. Thirdly, Holly Davidson. Fourthly, the fact that the goalkeeper wore philosophy football shirts, which I used to see advertised in When Saturday Comes, loads of myself. I eventually, I think the only one I've ever got round to buying was when I was at uni, I had a Lev Yashin, the one that's about the joy of seeing Yuri Gagarin flying in space is only superseded by the joy of a good penalty save. I always wanted to get the Shankly one and never got around to it, but because they're so expensive anyway. So there were things I think about the trappings of the show that it's the kind of thing that if you see a bit of it, you go, oh, that's that football sitcom that's, you know, that's got the philosophy football shirts and has got the good music and has got Holly Davidson in it. So I had a sense of having quite liked it. And so I've always kind of had that kind of affectionate memory of it. And I remember things like, you know, whenever you see Lucy Punch show up in something, whether it's Hot Fuzz or when she was cast originally in the pilot of a show called Powers, which was based on a Brian Michael Bendis comic that I really liked. It eventually got made into a not very good TV show, but she was originally cast in the pilot. And I was like, I can't believe that the girl who was the second girl on Renford Reject is now playing the lead in an American comic book TV adaptation. It's things like that. And in fact, I wrote an article years and years ago it was probably one of the most read things that I've written about football and football culture that tracked down the various cast members and what they were up to, and it was inspired by Lucy Punch having been cast in that pilot. So, you know, I've kind of had this liking for all of these trappings and stuff. And speaking of the trappings, one of the first things, Dave, that I am just going to pick you up on is when you said about the thing of wearing the Chelsea shirt and the Barcelona shorts. I'm sorry, that is completely accurate for a teenage boy. Like, when you're a kid, you have bits of football kits and you wear a shirt. Unless you're like 12, you don't wear a full kit. You wear whatever you have around. I'm totally fine with that. And I think in general, I think the person on the show who had the best attention to detail and was the best at their job was the person who was responsible for costume and wardrobe, because, you know, I think they're always good and pretty spot on with the shirts that they've got the characters wearing. They mix them up. There's good shirts in there. They always seem to be right for whatever team the characters would support or whatever. And you've got all of the choices of the philosophy football shirts that always work well. So I think that's one of the better elements of the show.
On that, did you notice that when Martin Keown played for the Razors, like their kit is an ill-fitting kind of tent made by a brand called ProStar, but he had the ProStar logo covered over with a Puma logo because he wore Puma boots. So obviously that was
he was obviously kind of, yeah.
that's the episode with Zola in as well, isn't it?
Yeah. Where Zola plays like a hard man and Martin Keown has silky skills.
But Lucy Punch was one of the things I picked up on that I actually liked, because I think she's excellent. The soundtrack, though, like, I don't know if you've... When you go back and realise, it was all songs that were good 2 years before they were actually on Renford Rejects.
So, yeah, I mean, that's fair.
You know, like, it comes out in 1998, we said it starts, and nearly every song in the sort of five episodes I ended up consuming came out in 1995, 1996 or 1997. So obviously the people who were writing it or coming up, you know, whoever was doing the music on it, had a pretty highly specific taste. Don't get me wrong, a couple of absolute belters on there. Pet Shop Boys, I forget which tune it is, but it's one of my favourites of theirs that's on there. And a few others, but it's just, I don't know, the thing is, Seb, I think it just feels so unsatisfying as a whole. Mm. I think it's the lack of the sort of characters and the really paint-by-numbers plot of each one.
Yeah, the issue is definitely, and this is the thing that really struck me watching it back, is you would kind of accept that a sitcom kind of about football, and particularly about like kids football effectively, you would kind of accept that the football side of it wouldn't look very good, and the football side of it is like routinely dreadful.
Yeah,
but I'm kind of okay with that, in the sense, you know, the football never looked good in Jossie's Giants, but you forgive it, partly because it's about a ramshackle rubbish kids team. And, you know, it's just, we know it's difficult to film football. It's difficult to film football if you've got a Hollywood budget, never mind a Nickelodeon sitcom budget. You would forgive that if you thought the general wider sense of it knowing about football was better. But yeah, I think beyond very superficial stuff and you know, okay, this is us being nerds, but like the jokes are very obvious. You know, yes, they get kind of people to guest, and sometimes they get kind of you know, not the most famous players to guest, but it still does, just does seem to be who could we get rather than we're going to get someone because we have a specific joke to make about them. Like, I quite like the Casey Keller appearance, but it's ridiculous that a group of teen footballers where football is their obsession would meet Casey Keller, even in like 98, 99, when he wasn't like at the peak of his fame, but that they wouldn't know who Casey Keller was, and that just because he's an American, they would think he was an American football player. It's like he's one, at that, certainly at that point, he's one of the most well-known American soccer players that there's pretty much ever been. And so it's like, you know, it's that side of it irritates, because you never really buy that the team are actually, you know, interested in or knowledgeable about football. But I do think that a lot of that stuff is stuff that you could get away with if the sitcom side of it was funnier. And it's not. And it's not that kids' sitcoms can't be funny. Like, kids' aimed sitcoms are entirely capable of being their own right. Yeah. And this just is not at all. And then it sort of, it starts out, okay, like the first episode I think is fine and kind of sets things up reasonably well. And I actually think, I think there's a point at which the series drops off a cliff, and it's after the second. I think from a sort of credibility point of view, I think the first two seasons are okay. Like, the first season is all relatively grounded and close, and like, you've got the idea of like the character who's into, like, he wants to be like an anchorman, and he makes his own like home videos and stuff. You've got at the end of series one, at the start of series two, you've actually got a carryover where Holly Davidson's character actually appears at the start of series two and is involved in the plot line that hands over to the character of Sue coming in, and like Robin goes off and like gets a trial at Chelsea Ladies, and it's like, it kind of, you know, and they film at Stamford Bridge, and it's like, that actually all kind of makes sense. You start to get kind of sillier plot lines as series two goes on. But series three opens with an episode called Masterclass that is about the cafe getting turned, like, so Eddie, the cafe owner, becomes their manager at the start of series three, and he turns the cafe into a fitness center. And all of a sudden, the show starts acting like this school five-a-side team are like a famous football team.
Yeah, and they're on normal telly.
And they're on proper telly, and like, they have fans and stuff. And it's like, but that's not the premise of the show. And that is the point where it just, absolutely, the sitcom side of it just gets more and more ridiculous, and the football side of it gets even more and more ridiculous. And then we go into series four, which starts with the word, they're in like the European or world beach volleyball, not beach football championships. And it's just, it's lost all sense of being at least this slightly grounded sitcom about a group of friends, a group of school friends who play football. It just really sort of, and it would be fine if the show had had a kind of better sense of the absurd throughout, and if this was all quite heightened ridiculousness, it would get away with it more, but it really doesn't. It's like are they all participating in like a shared delusion or something?
Yeah, absolutely. Just to go back to you mentioned Casey Keller as a guest star. I think, was it the same episode Peter Shilton was on?
Yes.
And he wanted to be a striker.
T-Rex,
but he was still dressed like a goalkeeper.
Yeah, this is what I mean about
that. That's not a bad joke. I thought that's a quite good joke, actually. You get Peter Shilton in because you want him to play in goal, and Peter Shilton turns around and goes, I've always wanted to be a striker, can I play up front? And he's absolutely terrible up front. That's a good joke. That's one of the best jokes that I've seen the show do.
I don't mind that joke, but why is he still dressed in a goalkeeper kit and goalkeeper pants?
But again, it's just that... just that general feeling of lack of attention. The closing credits come up and special guest stars, Casey Keller's spelt wrong.
And oh, that's right. Yeah, they spell it with a C, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, that's the sort of thing that...
mean, I can forgive credit mistakes because I see how they happen, but I know what you mean. It's, yeah.
But I would suggest it's probably very rare it happens with a guest star that is, you know, in it to try and propel it up a notch and show, you know, look, proper footballer, etc. It's those little bits where you're just like, it feels like it starts off with semi-good intentions, but without the, like I said, without the football inspector involved. But then as you get to, like, that episode, it just feels like they've almost not stopped caring, but it feels like they're in that world of some children's TV where it's just churn them out really quickly.
you know,
just get them done. Yeah. That one's done. Right, we'll film another whole episode in the morning. and the problem is that you see all of that on screen, don't you? You feel every minute of that on screen. It's not like anything is hidden away, because you can make really, really good TV really, really good quickly for very little budget, but this ain't it, Chief.
I mean, that to me is most evident when you get to that fourth series. And as I say, I mean, the program is clearly on its uppers by that point. And like one of that first episode, that's the beach volleyball one. I keep calling it beach volleyball, the beach football one. It might as well be beach volleyball for all the relevance that football has to the plot. And that's the episode where they decide to turn. Well, it's where they've actually made Terry a member of the regular cast. Like, he's in the opening titles at that point, and they make him as the enemy. Like, that him and his dad are like the comedy blundering bad guys for that fourth series, and that first episode is dreadful. But the fascinating thing about that, and this kind of, I think, to me sums up part of the I hate ascribing like an attitude or you know, a kind of a motivation to things, but the biggest thing that gives me a sense of will this do about the show, particularly at that point, is that beach football episode obviously was not intended to be the first episode of series 4. And the reason that I know that is, did either of you watch any other episodes of series 4 apart from that first one?
Hell no.
I watched the one with Keon and...
Right.
And, was that series 4? Yeah, then I did watch that, yeah.
Yeah.
Right, so... In the first episode of Series 4, it opens with the Renford Rejects playing in a beach football tournament. And all of a sudden, they have a guy on their team who has never been mentioned before. In the course of that whole episode, nobody ever says that the character's name is Dennis, and he has about one line of dialogue. And there is no explanation for why he's there, who he is, or why Stuart, who has been a major character in the show for the previous three series, why he suddenly disappeared. He is not mentioned. And I went back and checked the last couple of episodes of Series 3 to check whether Stuart's departure was covered. And it isn't. Like, the series just ends at the end of Series 3, and there's no kind of, you know, Stuart's leaving plotline or anything. So I thought, okay, what's obviously happened here is they bumped the beach football episode to be Episode 1, because for whatever reason they think it's the best one to start with, which in itself is a ludicrous decision, because it's such a bad episode. And it's like, if this is your one that's going out first, so you've got serious problems. So I started watching Episode 2. And in Episode 2, Dennis is there. I think he gets a bit more dialogue in Episode 2. Not much, but a bit more. And I think his name might get said at one point, but not in any kind of introductory way. Just like someone might say Dennis at one point. It's like, okay, that character's called Dennis. Now I know that after having had an entire episode with him. Episode 3, once again, no explanation for who he is. No explanation for where Stuart is. Episode 4, the same. All of a sudden, Episode 5 starts with a mention of the fact that the Rejects have got a new manager and his name is Dennis, and Mia is trying to impress him so that she gets picked for the team, and he does an interview with Vinny where he talks about changing things and how... And it finally gets mentioned that he is the new, in Episode 5, the new caretaker manager of the Rejects while Stuart is away. So it's painfully obvious that the episode that went out as number 5 was made as number 1. Now, obviously, episode orders get changed around in things for all kinds of reasons. But to have a show where you've got a fundamental change to the makeup of the show, and you've got references to somebody being new, to let that episode go out 5th after 4 episodes where this character has been in place, that is what says to me, we did not give a shit about this programme when we were putting it out. And maybe the broadcast order was Nickelodeon's decision and the people who made it, you know, that wouldn't have been what they wanted to do. But you feel like someone somewhere should have said, look, at the very least, can we not ADR a bit of dialogue over some of the footage in the beach football episode to say, oh, here's our new guy Dennis. Like, they don't even think to do that. And I know it's a kids sitcom, and you know, I think, you know, again, without wanting to ascribe motivations, like the attitude would just be, oh, it's just a kids sitcom, who's going to notice? Like, they'll all get shown out of order, they'll be repeated at random times, no one's going to follow it. But there is a, you know, there is a big difference between great kids shows and bad kids shows. And you know, we talked before about Saved by the Bell. Saved by the Bell has the exact same problem. It has the Tory problem in its final season, which, if you don't know that story, was when they filmed a half-length final season, and then the order got upped to more episodes, but they hadn't renewed everybody's contract, and Tiffany Amber Thiessen and Elizabeth Berkley said no, so they had to make half a season of episodes with a brand new character called Tory. And then because they'd already filmed the last episode with everybody leaving, they broadcast the last season alternating Kelly and Jesse episodes with Tory episodes, with no explanation for where Tory had come from or why Kelly and Jesse weren't in those episodes. So maybe Renford Rejects was doing a bit of a tribute to that. But anyway, but my point is that it's possible for a kids show to still have enough attention to detail to care about some semblance of continuity. And with Renford Rejects, after, as I say, they handled the changeover of Robin leaving and Sue arriving, and then even from series 2 to 3, there's a very brief mention at the start of series 3, Sue has left, they're looking for a new player, Mia's going to join the team. They at least bother to cover it. But aside from that, you know, the way that it handles it from series 3 to 4 is just ludicrous.
Can we get Tiffany Amber Thiessen and Elizabeth Berkley to solve the UK's Tory problem?
No one can solve the UK's Tory problem.
But Terry and the father, they start off as, you know, the antagonists. They're interested in their team, and they're just kind of bullying the rejects just because they bully everyone else. But then by that season 4 episode, the two of them are getting a flight to Spain to actively sabotage, almost like fucking Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner.
Yeah, Dick Dastardly, you know, and Muttley, isn't it?
They almost kill him, and of course they end up, you know, making shit of themselves. But it's just fucking bizarre. And then obviously you mentioned the soundtrack, and it is, songs in it are pretty good, but I would love to see the minutes of the meeting where they were like, okay guys, what do we have as this theme tune for a series about a group of teenagers who are friends and get on well and are trying to fight against the odds? I know, how about the one written by the guy who was struggling to deal with life after one of his friend's cars was found at Severn Bridge?
Yeah. The whole thing, right from, I mean, when they did care in the early seasons, it still feels like they didn't. And some of the stuff is just, there's a joke which actively made me want to punch the screen really early on in the very first episode, which is when the goalkeeper tries out for the school team. Obviously, he lets in 3 or 4, one goes through his legs, and Stoker says, let me get it exactly right. Goalkeeper, goal sleeper, more like. I mean, what does that even mean? There's so many jokes, like actual football things you could say there, and so many things that would A, be funny, and B, be relevant. But goal sleeper, it doesn't relate to anything. It's not a pun, it's not a punchline. Goal sleeper and goalkeeper are completely different things. They don't pun on each other. It's just, It just doesn't work. And I think genuinely, probably like, I think that's about 2.5 minutes into episode one, that was the moment I thought, I hate this. And I just couldn't get over it. Holly Davidson as well, Seb, I, you know, I could imagine falling in love with her if I was 12 years old, but I was trying to figure out where I knew her from, and she's a girl in the absolutely dreadful Van Wilder
she is,
sequel.
That's the thing she's probably most... The two things she's most well known for are being Sadie Frost's sister and being in that dreadful Van Wilder scene. The Van Wilder film that didn't have Ryan Reynolds in it.
Well, Van Wilder, Paths to Liaison, is a proper sort of guilty pleasure film. I mean, it's terrible, but it's got some absolutely quality jokes in it. You know, it's like, it's your American Pie level of guilty pleasure. But the sequel, it's not got Ryan Reynolds in it, and Taj moves into one of those weird American fraternities, and she's one of the girls who lives there. Because I literally spent ages trying to place, and I had to look it up. And I always pride myself on trying to remember where they're from. Like, one of the other players, I remembered him from a very brief appearance in the very underrated BBC Three sitcom Him and Her. She'll never be a Renford reject. She'll always be Charlie's geeky housemate.
For me, it's the complete opposite. It's anything else she turned up in, which she hasn't acted for a while. She was in The Bill for a bit as well. But it's like, she's always, it's Robin from Renford Rejects.
It's just that lack of attention. And like you say, by the time they get to that beach football episode, Seb, it was nigh on unwatchable.
I didn't get to the end of that one. I started skipping through that one because it was, when I was skipping through, I was only skipping through to try and find out if they actually mentioned Dennis's name and introduced and explained his character at any point. You mentioned him before, I think one of the things I remembered quite liking about the show was that it had this character who was a blonde poetry writing goalkeeper with glasses, because, that was me as a teenager. You know, he was the character from the bits I saw of it when I was a kid who I would have identified with the most. A fact which now horrifies me, because I think, with the possible exception of Ronnie in the first couple of series, I think that Ben is the worst thing about the show. He's such an appalling character with no likable characteristics whatsoever. I mean, none of them are particularly likable. I think, despite the fact that he kind of starts off with this terrible posh accent that he then gives up on, I think Stuart's all right. Stuart seems like a decent sort.
Yeah, I would agree.
But Ben is just appalling, and he's just not funny. Although I was quite, but again, when I went and did that article, looking at where everybody was, like, Charlie Rowland has not acted for many, many years. He basically gave up his acting career to sort of settle down and have a more normal career and look after his family and stuff. At the time that I looked him up, he was working as a claims team manager, working with bike insurance, like motorbike insurance, for Hastings Direct. But he's now a mortgage and protection advisor. But he's based in Hove, Dave. He's lived on the south coast since 2003. He's based in Hove. He looks happy looking at his LinkedIn page. He's obviously, content with his lot in life. I'm sure that he is much nicer in real life than Ben is in the show.
Ben just has his head in the clouds, and like I said at start, there's never any character development. What was it, the Zola and Keon one where, I'm going to become a Boy Scout. Like, fucking hell.
I can forgive sitcoms that don't develop the characters, because it's kind of... it's a kind of an accepted thing with sitcom that, some sitcoms are about developing the characters as they go on. Other sitcoms are about the end of every episode resets everything to how it was at the start, because that's how the sitcom works. I don't mind that, and I think you can forgive that in a kid's sitcom. I think the issue is more, none of the characters start off in a place that's particularly funny or interesting. It's like, what is Jason's personality beyond being a bit arrogant? The only one who's kind of got much of a memorable personality is Bruno. And it's like that's and he's the thing that everyone remembers from the show. It's like, oh, it had that character who pretended to be Italian. But it's such a... I mean, again, if the show was leaning into being absurd in a more general sense, it might be okay. But particularly in those early episodes, which are trying to be a bit more grounded, what you're looking at is a kid who spends all day, every day, speaking in a stereotypical Italian accent, pretending that he's Italian. And like, so
yeah,
in the...
It's a mental illness.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And in the second episode... which I don't know if any of you watched episode 2 of series 1, but that one's worth watching for a particularly interesting facet, which is that basically Bruno gets threatened with being beaten up by Terry and one of Terry's heavies. And it ultimately leads to a ridiculous plot line where they get Eddie to dress up as a mafioso and the Godfather music plays and he pretends that he actually is connected to the mafia and it's nonsense. But Terry's heavy... is played by one James Corden.
Yeah. Yeah, I knew.
But that actually was far from the worst plot line, like Eddie pretending to be a mafioso. Like, that says more about the show. But actually, do you remember, you mightn't, the episode where Bruno lost his mojo and just reverted to being Barry?
I've heard about that one, but I didn't actually watch that one.
And he, like, his default accent is kind of Brummy, even though the show is supposed to be in London.
But they're not characters, they're just a list of traits on a whiteboard somewhere, aren't they? That's the thing. And I mean, some of them are just like really lazily stereotypical, and it just grates. And it again, I know I'm banging on about the same thing, but the goalkeeper's wearing his football philosophy T-shirts and what have you, but he spends half the games he's wearing them, and in other games he's wearing a goalkeeper top. So are you wearing a goalkeeper top when you play for the Rejects, or are you just wearing a normal T-shirt and gloves? And it's little stuff like that that, again, I know, I remember 12-year-old me, he was great. But that's the sort of thing that wouldn't... Genuinely, it wouldn't have got past me. It would have properly annoyed me. The whole city top is... you know, the whole city tops are real. The Chelsea tops are real. There are other football shirts in it that are real. But Bruno's Italian shirts are always those... do you remember when there was that spate, that fashion in, like, your Top Shops and River Islands to do these retro football shirts? So you'd get like a yellow shirt with a green collar and that was Brazil, and there'd be the plain blue one with a really, really simple Italy badge on it. He's always got something like that on, and it's stuff like that. It's just nothing seems to sit together as a whole. You've just got all these disparate, undeveloped things wandering around in a plot that is sort of wafer thin at the very, very best of times. I mean, we've sat and talked for an hour about the worst thing James Corden has ever been in. And I mean, that's a low bar. This, like I say, there's something else that annoyed me, because I just ended up writing down a list of annoyances. In the beach episode, they've got Bob Wilson and Jim Rosenthal there doing it for terrestrial TV because we're all interested in this competition. A, what TV channel on earth is picking that up? And B, why have they got two anchors? They're both anchors at that point. Why didn't they just get one and get a pundit, get an ex-footballer as pundit? If you can get Shilton way back in episode whatever it was, you can pick up even a fairly nondescript ex-footballer just so that you've got a more normal structure to try and work a couple of gags round, rather than basically two anchormen who the conceit seems to be that they just want to go to watch this tournament so they can get pissed. It's in a kid's show. It's just so annoying.
Right, I'm gonna. It's funny actually. As a side note, I was skimming through a couple of things on YouTube to see things to remind me of. I've just found one where Ben is actually wearing the same Yuri Gagarin philosophy football shirt that I did, the Lev Yashin one that I owned. I want to challenge you both to tell me something that you liked about Renford Rejects. And something that you unequivocally liked and enjoyed.
Are you going first, Dave?
No, I need some thinking time.
I mean, surely, like, Dennis, you've got to agree with me that aside from the thing about the knockoff kits for Bruno, some of the choices of kits were good. I mean, that Hull shirt that Jason's wearing throughout the first series or so.
The Derek right away, yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't completely hate Eddie's wife, you know, being an unseen character. I know it was completely unoriginal.
You bastard. That's literally the only thing I was clinging to. Because the best gag, the only gag in the whole thing that made me smile is when he's manager and she's got the hot dog stand and you can't see her head because it's just behind the hot dog sign. Yeah. Oh, I'm thinking of something else now.
I know you were kind of critical of him before. I think the Eddie stuff generally is quite good. Because like Alex Norton is a good actor who's like, I mean, I think he's best known for he was in Taggart. Like, was he the one who was, I don't know if he was the lead, but he was in Taggart after Taggart had died and it was just about other characters. He's giving it his all, I think. I think you can, you know, it's fair to say.
I wouldn't disagree with that. And I think some of the musical cues are pretty good. You know, some are sort of... There are occasional times where it veers to try and use an appropriate piece of music. And that often works. But the reason I'm struggling with, and I hate just saying something is just absolute crap for an hour, but it's just all so lazy. That's my problem with it. It also, and kids' TV doesn't have to be like that at all, you know, and this isn't a sort of rose-tinted spectacle thing because I have to watch a lot of TV with my 9-year-old daughter now, and it's... I mean, as I said, some of it is genuinely really funny, you know, really, really funny. And that's what I keep coming back to with this. It doesn't have to be like this. And it just grates on me. So, but yeah, I wouldn't disagree on that. So I think that's, and like Dennis said, the long running gag of not being able to see his wife's face, I think works and is funny. But that genuinely for me, that is about it.
I mean, okay. So can you, I mean, I think part of the issue with us, I think, just not clicking with it is, I think definitely it's something where if you had liked it at the time, I mean, you said, you know, before, Dave, that sort of 12-year-old Dave would have still got annoyed with, like, but not everyone's as pedantic as us. And, like, I mean, can you see in this a show that if you're 12 and you're, you know, you get on enough with the football conceit and you like the kind of the setting of it, can you see the show that people like, or does it just baffle you that anyone would have enjoyed this even as a kid?
No, it baffles me, to be honest. I think I know I'm coming across as just like properly overtly negative, but it's we're a generation who grew up on things like Grange Hill or Biker Grove or Maid Marian, or then further on, you know, things like Spats. This is so far below any of that stuff. And I know what you said about revisiting Spats, but I'm almost certain it would still be a hell of a lot better than this was. Because this just feels like somebody's had an idea, the channel's given them a rough budget, right, go and get 10 episodes as quickly as you possibly can out of it. And I just can't get past that. And I think it's the thing is the annoying thing is, and I think Dennis touched on this earlier, is that the idea for a kids show is a really good one. You know, it's Josie's Giants did something similar, the sort of disparate band of, you know, footballers rejected by other people and, you know, they aren't the best and what have you. That's a well-trodden path. We all sit here and have read a lot of football comics in our time and what have you. That is a trope that works. We all know that. And this is just done in such a way as it just kills the premise stone dead for me. and in a literal sense, from the first episode.
Do you know what they should have done? They should have just bought the rights to what was it called? Barnes United. Or Tommy's Troubles, is that it?
Yeah, Tommy's Troubles just, would have been better.
Like, it was gentle stuff. There was a couple of gags, but it was enjoyable.
So we talked a little bit about the shirts that the characters wear throughout the show, but I'm mindful that I can't let the discussion go without us just talking a little bit about that infamous reject kit, because that purple and black striped colour scheme was striking, and I think one of the most memorable things about the show. First of all, Dennis, just purely from where does it rank for you in terms of fictional football teams' colour schemes?
Just as a point of order, was it more purple and navy than purple and black?
I guess,
am I looking wrong? It's not horrific. Like, the colours don't fully complement each other, but, you know, they go well together, you know, to a degree. And then they have the gold sponsorship providing a bit of contrast. One thing on that is why they're still sponsored by Supra Drain even after Ronnie Supra has left.
Especially seeing as Ronnie comes back for one third series episode and basically almost helps the team go under before kind of... So, like, he comes back and he's a total dickhead and he's going to, like, buy their ground and sell it for development and stuff and then eventually, like, relents and he buys it for them. But it's just, like, it's just weird. It's a weird episode, that one.
A badly written episode.
Yeah,
but in terms of fictional football teams... obviously, it's nowhere near the red and yellow of Melchester.
Of course.
I would actually rank it just above the purple of Harchester, just because it's just a bit more of an interesting...
That was a terrible kit, Harchester's kit.
Yeah.
That was the worst thing, like, about that programme.
But they did that because it was an easy thing to CGI onto Chelsea kits, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but just make the team blue rather than giving yourself the extra trouble of changing the blue to purple. And what other fictional teams am I trying to compare them to?
What about the light blue of Dave Storey in Scorer?
Oh, yeah. That was a very kind of just...
Were they called Tolcaster?
Very workman-like kit, wasn't it? There wasn't much excitement to it. And then the Warriors was kind of like the opposite. The Sun was the opposite of Melchester. But it didn't work as well.
And just on, I'm curious as to if anything occurs to you in answer to this. Can you think of any either precedents or post examples of a team wearing the same colour scheme as the Renford Rejects?
Are you going to say the 2012-13 Arsenal away shirt?
I didn't know that one, actually.
That was hoops rather than stripes.
Oh, it was the hooped one. That was dreadful. There is a better one.
That was horrific.
There is a kit that I'd never seen before from a couple of years ago that is basically the Renford Rejects kit. And if I don't know if you recall it or if you want to quickly Google it, but it is Everton's...
Is it an English team?
It was Everton's 2017-18 third kit. Give it a Google. It literally is the Renford Rejects kit. It's a fluorescent greeny yellow rather than gold, but it still basically looks like the Renford Rejects kit. It's astonishingly close.
Yeah, that's a good shout. That's a good shout.
I can't believe I didn't see that before.
The other one, and it's actually from a similar time, would be the Coventry, I think 98, 99 away.
Yes, I remember that kit. That's a nice kit. I like that kit.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I see the one you mean. Yeah.
I do wonder, like, I mean, I know I've sort of attacked this programme for having like nobody taking a proper interest in it. But you do wonder if the kit was the one thing that there was a level of thought went into. Because it is, I mean, it again, if you want a positive from the show, Seb, the kit, it was all right.
There you go. Although I'm not so sure about Terry Stoker's dedication to wearing his Razors kit like literally all the time.
There's like, what are they? They're in the orange, aren't they?
Yeah, a very Dutch kind of orange shirt, black shorts. Yeah, but with
which
the word
isn't,
Razors.
Like I'm really surprised there. That's not a like a villain colour. I'm surprised they didn't go for like some black kit or something really cliched.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, again, that might have required thought. So, well, we've given the Renford Rejects as thorough a kicking as the Razors ever gave them. I think it's fair to say, and I was kind of disappointed going back to it because I think I expected to have kind of a fonder reaction to it. I thought what I would do is I would go back and watch it and think, yeah, this isn't very good, but I can see why it was liked. And actually, what I didn't expect was at times for it to be actively difficult to watch. And that's a shame. Is it better or worse than When Saturday Comes?
Oh,
you bastard.
The thing about When Saturday Comes is When Saturday Comes is lazy in another way, because when we did that podcast, that film just makes me so angry in how it portrays the North more than anything and the city it's supposed to be about. But I tell you what is a shout. I don't think the football action in When Saturday Comes and Renford Rejects, I don't think one's better than the other. You know, they're about the same level, to be perfectly honest with you. But I would rather watch a full series of Renford Rejects than watch When Saturday Comes again, I think, genuinely.
Well, there you go. There you go. I got you to say something positive about it.
Renford Rejects doesn't have Mel Sterland getting on the end of his own free kick.
Yeah. But that's that When Saturday Comes actually made me angry, whereas with Renford Rejects it just annoyed me throughout. So I'll take annoyance over outright anger. There you go. Put that on the DVD case.
Thanks for thanks Dennis and Dave for your views on that beloved series of so many of our listeners. Thanks to those of you who've listened, those of you who haven't turned off in fury after we started laying into this. I genuinely though, I mean, if people are listening to this and were much bigger fans of the show than we turned out to be, I'd love to hear people's kind of thoughts, and you know, we'll happily sort of read and share on Twitter kind of positive reactions to
it. I would too. Because I hate being this negative about something, but it just nothing rang true for us. So I would like to. It would be nice to actually see one or two people say, "Yeah, you know, I absolutely loved it."
Yeah.
Yeah, and if Holly Davidson wants to get in touch, that's okay.
if you have enjoyed listening to this, if this is your first time, you can find all the episodes at beyondthetouchline.co.uk. We are also in all the usual podcast places. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter as a podcast. We are at BTTL Podcast. I'm at Seb Patrick. Dave is David Hartrick, and Dennis is Dennis_Hurley. But yes, thanks as ever for listening, and we'll see you next time when football will hopefully be back as well. See you then.
See ya.
Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.